Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Chances are you've seen it. You're at a youth football game. A ref makes a bad call. And it's not the kid who flips out, but the parent.
You're killing me! Red Zone can see this crap! These kids are trying to win a game and y'all ain't helping them none.
They don't need you to holler either, all right? Now that's enough.
How about some therapy?
Okay, so that's from a peewee football game, and that's the coach yelling. And we found that video on YouTube. Anthony, I have to say, it was not hard. There are thousands and thousands of these videos of badly behaved parents. It's just so common. And it's not in football. It's just about every sport.
I watch parents who their team can be up 20 points. And they're upset because their son didn't get 10 extra shots. Or their one son's not playing enough minutes.
And if you have kids, you've probably seen that more than a few times. And if you ever coached, as I have, you've probably been in the middle of it too often. It's understandable that parents want to root for their kids, but sometimes they forget that the point of sports is to let the children play.
Exactly. So you've been there, Anthony. We just
heard
a parent talk about it. Let's listen to a little bit more of what he had to say.
I think that's the biggest problem is the parents. There's a group that are living through their kids. They're a group that just wants their kids to do well. And they're so emotionally involved themselves. You know, listen, I coach basketball. I played in the NBA.
Okay, so I'm going to stop it right there.
Yeah, this guy is obviously not your average coach, right?
No, exactly. In Boston, he is, let's put it this way, the coach. Doc Rivers.
Coach of names like Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, and the rest of the Celtics.
Exactly. Head coach Doc Rivers. So how parents behave on the court or the diamond or on the field, this all really matters to him. I mean, so much so that he is a member of something called the National Advisory Board for a group known as the Positive Coaching Alliance.
Yeah, so this is a group that goes out and trains parents how to be better coaches.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about this group in a minute and about why our win-at-all-costs world, great parent coaches matter more than ever in this world that kids are growing up in. So we'll do that in just a minute. But here's the thing about Doc Rivers. He really, really gets this. And not just because he's head coach of the Celts, but because he's a parent himself.
I've seen coaches who scream and yell, but I say there's a positive way of doing that and there's a negative way. The negative way is yelling at someone, telling them, you're a terrible player. I can't believe you're taking that shot, or you're stupid for doing something like that. And then the positive way is the same tone. The guy is yelling at you, but he's saying, you're better than that. I know you can do it. You're a great player. You're not playing like that. They're both yelling, but it's completely different, and I think that's the difference.
Doc Rivers, do you mind if I ask if you remember a time in your own coaching career where you felt like you made a mistake in dealing with a player?
Oh, absolutely. I make them all the time. It's funny. I tell my players on opening night that I'm going to do my best to make you better people. I'm going to do my best to make you better players and to make our team a better team. And I guarantee you that I'm going to make a mistake. And when I do, I guarantee you it's never personal. Every decision I try to make is for what I think at that moment is good for the team. That doesn't mean it's going to be the right decision dealing with an individual, and that doesn't mean it's going to be the right decision with the team. But if we do it and follow, there's a chance you're still going to win because everybody has bought it.
Do you remember a specific story of a player that you dealt with?
Oh, I can remember a lot. Some I can't say. But some, yeah, you know, where I've gotten on the player. Usually it's something about his effort, or in my opinion, I think he's being selfish. And then, you know, you go back and you watch the film, and you find out, you know, I think I was wrong. And when that happens, I go in and tell the player that.
Doc Rivers, so you've mentioned that remembering sort of the content of what you're telling people is really, really important, that one way to motivate players is to help them become better people. Are there any other factors that you think are absolutely essential to being a successful coach?
Well, I think you have to know people. And I don't think there is a book on how to treat people. I think to be a successful coach, you have to be a successful people person. And that meaning that everyone has to like you. But you have to find a way to get to people. I have to find a way every single practice and every day to get to a group of men to motivate them to act as a teammate, not as an individual. To me, that's an everyday process. It's a very difficult process. But it's a process that you have to be willing to reach in and get your hands in there every day.
So, Doc Rivers, I also wonder what influence professional coaches and professional athletes themselves have in this picture. Because, you know, kids look up to pro athletes as, you know, they want, like you said, they want to be them. So when there's bad behavior on the court or in the field, you know, those bench-clearing brawls, or when Paul Pierce kind of throws a fit because he didn't make a shot. Like, do you think that that has an effect when professional athletes are setting a standard of behavior?
Yeah, I do. Now, at the end of the day, parents have to be the role model and set the example, and I think we all know that. But we always are looking for other examples outside of the house, and I think we do. I've also been in the belief that the good examples are terrific and we need those. But the bad examples aren't bad either. They're learning points. They're teaching points. To me, that's the time when you sit your kid down and you say, you see that? That's not how you act.
Do you have a specific example of when you sort of encountered one of those teaching moments of turning something negative into a positive?
Yeah, I can remember for myself. You know, I grew up in a town in Chicago that produced basketball players, and there were two guys that were my role models. They weren't even pros. They were just high school basketball players when I was in grade school. And I wanted to be them. And they both got in trouble. One drug use, one broke the law. And, you know, you saw them walking around the streets doing nothing. And I remember my dad and mom said, that kid was a terrific player. He could have been, but he's not. And he's not because he made wrong choices. And I thought that stuck with me as much as a positive role model. I knew what I didn't want to be, too. Now, I will say this, though. I think it's tougher for kids now to have role models. You know, when I grew up, we didn't point out our role models' faults as much as we do now. You know, it's tough to have one because eventually it just feels like you're going to find something about the guy that you follow that you don't like. And so I do think it's far tougher now in our generation. I mean, when I look at Babe Ruth and how they conducted themselves off the field, today, I don't know if they would have been role models as much as they were in their day, and that's too bad for kids. You know, remember my son wrote an article, and the title was, "Please let my role models be role models. I don't want to know about the other stuff. I just want to know about the good stuff so I can follow someone." And there's a lot of truth to that.
Interesting. Well, Doc Rivers, you have a really interesting philosophy called Ubuntu. I was wondering if you might be able to share what that is with our listeners.
The definition of Ubuntu is a person is a person through other people. I can't be all I can be unless you are all you can be. And basically, I am because you are. It's a powerful way of life. It's the way the South Africans through apartheid kind of connected themselves, that they realized everything each individual did was important for their success. And we try to conduct ourselves in Ubuntu as Celtics, and it allows us to be a team. It allows us to kind of drop our guards as individuals and let the team in, put the team first, and I think it's very important. It's a very important way to live life.
Doc Rivers, head coach of the Boston Celtics, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
And by the way, Doc Rivers spoke to us from his car this morning. He was stuck on 93 headed towards the Boston Garden. But Anthony, of course, you know, I also had to ask him about the NBA lockout, speaking of the Celtics, and if we were actually going to see the Celts on the court this season.
Yes, and what did he say?
He couldn't actually comment except to say that he hopes so.
Well, if the lockout continues, I guess Doc Rivers will have a little more time to cheer on his own kids.
Exactly. So we are talking about kids' sports and parents and their behavior at sporting games, and especially parents who are coaches and how to make parents better coaches. Listeners, moms, dads, players out there, what do you think is going on with parents these days who are on the sidelines and who are the coaches themselves? Do you think they're too focused on winning? Or maybe the flip side of the coin here is intensity and competitiveness actually a way to prep kids for the reality of the competitive world they'll be entering or inheriting? But what was it about a great coach who inspired you, when you think about it, or a terrible coach who didn't. We want to hear your stories today, so give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And also, especially if you are a coach, give us a call as well, because we want to hear what the reality of being out there on the field is like for you. So, Anthony, I got to ask, you mentioned earlier that you had coached your daughter's soccer team. Did you ever receive any training on how to do that?
No, and I'm sorry for my daughter that I didn't. And let's just say I think it's good that I didn't give up my day job as a radio person, because I could have used some coaching out there on how to be a coach.
Well, you're not alone, because apparently, according to the New York Times, of the 2.5 million parents who have coached some kind of youth sport, fewer than 10% got any sort of formal training. And so they're basically going into this like very important endeavor with almost no support or help at all. So folks like Doc Rivers, as we heard, they are hoping they're going to change that. And Doc Rivers, as we mentioned, is on an advisory board for an organization called the Positive Coaching Alliance. It's a national nonprofit committed to character building in youth sports. So we're going to talk a little bit more now about what the Positive Coaching Alliance does. And joining us in the studio is Eric Eisendrath. He's the lead trainer at the Positive Coaching Alliance. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Rob Crawford. He is school administrator and coach at the Fay School in Southborough. Rob has gone through training at the Positive Coaching Alliance. And Rob, welcome to you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Let me ask you quickly, what do you coach at the Fay School?
I'll be helping out with the baseball team this spring.
The baseball team. Okay, yep. So we're going to talk a little bit more about what that's like. But Eric Eisendrath, let me start with you and just ask, you know, we heard Doc Rivers say that he had witnessed, in his own past, good coaches and bad coaches. But I have to say, just anecdotally, it feels like in the past maybe 10 years or so, things have gotten way more intense in youth sports. I mean, I used to do it in high school. That was a while ago now. It doesn't feel anywhere near like it's the same world now. Is there evidence that parents are behaving more badly these days?
I would say absolutely yes. I would say part of it, too, as sort of Doc alluded to, is there's so much more involvement and so much more coverage on these things. But really, not to quote Malcolm Gladwell, but I really do think we're at a tipping point. The proliferation of bad conduct is really getting to the point where it's really becoming intolerable and it's becoming a crisis. And even personally speaking, to go watch my own kids play, there are times where I find myself just standing alone because the behavior of the parents has really gotten to the point where it's unpleasant.
A crisis, even though on the other side, some people think that we've sort of also entered into a situation where the whole everyone wins ethos has gone too far?
Well, see, I think that, frankly, is a bit of simply just an attempt of a market correction. The reality is, a lot of these things, if you look at the motive behind everybody gets a trophy and everyone gets equal playing time, left, sadly, particularly our anti-model, if you will, is the win-at-all-cost coach. And the reality is, a lot of these things have come about because the win-at-all coach, frankly, only played, if it's basketball, 5 kids, and nobody else ever got in the game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the same 3 kids always got the trophies. So I can understand there. You hear this sort of the ruination of society as we know it, that everybody gets a trophy and it makes people soft. I don't really think that that's true. And the reality is kids know as well. Carol Dweck, who's also on our advisory board, a psychology professor at Stanford, talks about what really builds character and confidence in kids is overcoming adversity and teaching the process of playing and competing in a positive way. And, I think that's really what we're trying to do.
Rob Crawford, I mean, you help coach the baseball team at the Fay School in Southborough. Do you hear or see this kind of bad behavior from parents at your games?
I see it occasionally, but one of the things that we've done in the Little Leagues where I've coached, because of the training from Positive Coaching Alliance, is we hold parent meetings at the beginning of the season, and we tell parents very clearly, this is what we stand for, these are the expectations of the players, and these are the expectations that we have for you as parents. Here's the type of program we're going to be running, here's what we stand for, and we will not tolerate this behavior or that behavior. Your job as a parent is to sit and watch the game and cheer for your child, for example, not to coach from the bench, not to criticize. Let us be the coaches. So by having a meeting at the beginning of the season with coaches, as we were trained to do by PCA, and as we train all parents at Fay School as well to do, we nip a lot of this in the bud, and parents know right off the bat what the ground rules are.
So I want to get into a little bit in more detail as to what the Positive Coaching Alliance does. But before that, I don't want to quite let this go, because I have to say, I'm curious to hear from both of you what you think is driving this like huge surge in not very sportsmanlike behavior. I've read that some parents behave as if they forget they're not watching a professional game, that these aren't people who are getting paid to play. They forget that it's their kids on the field, and or some of them. Doc Rivers mentioned he feels like parents are just living vicariously through their children. I mean, what's really making the bad behavior so bad?
Well, I think one of the driving forces is the amount of investment financially and time-wise that the parents sort of feel that they're putting into their child's involvement in sports. And I'm not saying it's correct, but you also get the sense that they feel that with all the money they are paying and all the hours that they are spending and all the miles that they are driving, that entitles them to involve themselves in a way in the sport that really is not set up for the success of anybody. I'm not saying it's right, but I feel that it sometimes brings a sense of misplaced entitlement on the part of the parent, that they are there to critique their child, that they're there to be the unofficial refereeing supervisor, that they're there to be the unofficial hitting coach. That's not the role the parents play.
Rob Crawford, I also know that I've personally spoken to a number of parents who they see some talent in their kids, and they really want that talent to blossom as fully as possible, so maybe the kid gets a scholarship to play in college. I mean, the other question I have about why parents do this is, do you have a sense that they just forget what the point is of youth sports in general?
Or did they ever know what the point was ever at any point? The point of youth sports is to have fun. The point of youth sports is to have a happy childhood. The point of youth sports is to learn certain things that can only be learned through participation on a team, as you try as a team or as an individual to win. But a lot of parents aren't even aware, I think, of what the real point of youth sports is, and they're completely focused on their own desire to be parents of kids who are winners. I think, as Eric said, a lot of it's the money, but you also see kids starting sports extremely young. So I don't think I started playing youth baseball in Brookline until fourth or fifth grade. That was the first year. And by the time you're in fourth or fifth grade, now in towns surrounding Boston, you've probably been playing 3 or 4 years, had a personal hitting coach, pitching coach, and you're either on the track towards being an elite player who plays Little League, you know, plays for the Williamsport title, or you've completely not, and everyone in the town knows it. So I think that's part of what drives it. But I think also parents are afraid that if their child loses, they're learning how to lose. Whereas if their child wins, well, now they're learning how to be a winner. And one of the things I love about Positive Coaching Alliance is they teach that that what's more important than what the scoreboard says is your pursuit of that goal, is your effort and your focus on improvement, and you're learning how to bounce back from mistakes.
So when the focus is on the opposite, I mean, Eric Eisendrath, you're familiar with the survey back in 2004, so quite a while ago, but it's still the results of the survey were very powerful. Of some 4,000 high school students who were surveyed, and nearly 60% of them thought it was okay to intimidate an opponent in football by deliberately inflicting pain, and half of them thought it was okay to trash talk after scoring. So there's a very strong trickle-down effect in terms of how kids themselves are seeing sports.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Absolutely. They are seeing so many examples of the wrong things in that regard. It's incredible.
So let's talk about how you counter that with the Positive Coaching Alliance. What is it that you do that turns the tables here?
Well, there are three principles we use to convey. Double goal coaching is what we talk about, striving to win and teaching life lessons. First of all, make it clear that the two aren't mutually exclusive. If a choice needs to be made, it's teaching life lessons. It's character development through sports. So to convey those principles, though, we use the first principle is the elm tree of mastery, really focusing on the mastery definition as opposed to scoreboard definition of performance. The next, Rob.
Oh, hang on. You said elm tree mastery?
Effort, learning, and mistakes being okay.
Okay.
Creating an environment, again, of celebrate the process and focus on effort. Make your goals effort goals as opposed to outcome goals, which is a much more, if you also, again, to quote Carol Dweck and the growth mindset of focusing on effort. A part of the process. Creating an environment, first of all, the kids are there to learn, and all of it is tied to the parents. You know, as Rob pointed out, we in our parent workshops give them a 100-point exercise and ask them to identify what are their goals and aspirations for their child's involvement in wherever Little League. And it's amazing what they will say. And the research continually will say that kids want to have fun, not win. They're there to have fun. They're there to make friends. They're there to do things they like to do. But if you watch the way people cheer in the stands, or even they say theoretically what they want, then you watch their behavior in the stands, and they're completely out of balance.
Rob Crawford, I've read also that the Positive Coaching Alliance, I love the elm tree analogy, but they also do something that maybe makes it more palatable to really sort of hard-charging coaches themselves, that the idea that the sort of positive aspects of coaching can actually make you a more winning coach.
Exactly. So the idea is that coaches who are focused completely on the scoreboard, they may get a good result that day and think it was because they taught their kids to focus on the win. But coaches our Fay School coaches are taught to teach the kids about that, as Eric was saying, to focus on their own effort, to focus on improvement, to focus on their mental approach, to focus on bouncing back from mistakes. Because in the long run, if your athletes are focused in that way on things that they can control, because no one can control the scoreboard. We can influence the scoreboard, but actually we'll have the most influence on the scoreboard in the long term if we focus on the things we can control, which is your own effort and your own mental approach.
There's one thing I read that I love that you guys train, and that's about how kids, when they've made a mistake in the moment, they can easily get hung up on that. And so you have a technique that helps the kid get past the emotional intensity of making a mistake and then go back and look at it later. What's that technique?
The flush? Is that what you're referring
to?
Yeah,
the flush.
The flush. It came from a sports psychologist that worked with Cal State Fullerton baseball team, and they were actually under 500, and they were playing tense. And the reality is, again, we come to peak performance. When you're playing afraid, you tend to play poorly, and particularly in baseball, which has so many inherent mistakes. So what they came up with is this idea: you need to treat a mistake like flushing the toilet. You flush it and it's gone. And it was adopted so much so that they put a little mini toilet in the dugout, and in between innings would come and flush the toilet, and they went on to win the College World Series.
It's interesting. So cause in that moment, there's an emotional connection between the coach and the player, and the coach just sort of makes this gesture like, you know, put it away, get past it, we'll talk about it later. And it helps sort of, I guess, clear the mind a bit.
Right, because, again, if you're focusing on the mistake you just made, what are you going to do, you know, 10 seconds later? You're going to make another one. And to not to interrupt, but to play off what Doc Rivers said, you know, he talks about this specifically, that on the Celtics, he said, I will never take a player out of the game for making a mistake. I'll only pull him out of the game if I think they're thinking about the mistake they just made. And I asked him, well, how do you do that? And he said, the buzzword on our team is next play. If you're on the team, if you're on the Celtics and you're on the court and someone makes a turnover, everyone turns to that player and yells next play. He said, we preach it in training camp. We tell the coaches. We tell the players. It has to be part of the culture that mistakes are part of the process of getting better. And if you play for coaches that don't tolerate mistakes, you'll have players that play tentatively and play tight.
I would add, that's what we teach our players. When they come off the field, we yell next play. All the kids yell next play to them. And when they come off the field, they already know that they've been forgiven for their mistake, but you better be focusing on the next at bat for Fay School's baseball team instead of dwelling on that mistake you made.
We are talking about what makes a good coach and making parents into better coaches. My guests are Eric Eisendrath. He is the lead trainer at the Positive Coaching Alliance. Apparently, you guys are working with some 90% of Boston Neighborhood Basketball League coaches.
Yes. The Boston Foundation has brought us in to work with all the BNBL coaches, and an enormous turnout. That's one of the leagues that we're working with in addition to others.
Including the American Youth Soccer Association, Little League, the big-name youth sports out there.
Yeah.
My other guest is Rob Crawford. He's a school administrator at the Fay School in Southborough, and he's gone through the Positive Coaching Alliance training. Let's hear from some of our listeners. There are a lot of them who have something to say. Charlie is calling from Lowell. You're on the air, Charlie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. What's your thought?
Great. Well, real quick, I just wanted to say that one of the things that I've noticed with my kids, I've been coaching over 20 years, is that I've seen an increase where the kids come up to me and apologize for their parents' behavior.
The kids are apologizing.
And say, the kids are apologizing. It's like, oh, coach, I'm so sorry. That wasn't something that I said. That was, you know, they don't understand what we're doing. I apologize for my dad's behavior, my mom's behavior. They don't know what we're doing. And I see that coming more and more. And real quick, just to say, everything that the two gentlemen have been saying, when I started my coaching career, we went from 0-15 to winning the championship within 3 years, and the kids loved it. They had a great time, and we built lifelong relationships that now, 20 years later, I'm still in contact with these kids, and they talk about the fond memories and the good times that they had. But one of the things that got me was the fact that you have kids that are in high school apologizing for adult behaviors on the sideline.
It does make you
literally sucking the fun out of it for the kids.
It does make you wonder who's the grown-up in this situation. Charlie, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Cohasset, where Amory's on the line. You're on the air, Amory.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I know that it's several you guys are trying to offer this to parents, but I guess what I'm going to try to tell you is I don't know why parents ever got involved in athletic instruction in the first place. They certainly have no purview with academic instruction. So to assume that parents are a logical choice to teach our children athletics is on its face, I think, patently wrong. If you think about children and how they physically develop, the way they learn, it's not something that you should just instinctively be able to walk on the field and be able to teach that. Physically, kids are so different. I've seen so many cases where so-called gifted kid at the age of 4, everyone's saying he's so great, you know, and in 10 years, he'll be burnt out and overweight and not want to do it. And, you know, and then you've got that young little scrawny kid that nobody thought was any good, and they don't get a chance to play, and they're the one that's going to be great 10 or 15 years from now.
Amory, it's a great question. Let's pick it up. I want to have Rob Crawford take a shot at that.
It's a good point.
Like, parents aren't trained.
I totally agree. If you look at public school teachers, they have to get a master's in education. They have to go through specific training and have a student teaching experience before they're allowed in front of a class to actually teach, whereas any coach, for example, Anthony said that he's just signed up to be a coach and had the opportunity to coach his child. It's, you're either going to be, you may be good, you may not be, but there's no training, and this is why I think it's so great that Positive Coaching Alliance was created. It creates a framework, it creates the training for parents or for anyone who wants to coach, to actually learn the techniques that are been proven by science, by research to be useful. And they don't only train coaches, they train parents, how to be parents. We've had Positive Coaching Alliance come in and talk to our parents at Faye School. They also do programs for kids. They've mm-hmm. come in and trained our ninth graders as well as our coaches. So it's a great point by the caller. Our coaches need formal training in order to be the best teachers of our youth athletes.
We've got some more comments online at radioboston.org. Elizabeth in Rhode Island writes, "Youth sports have become a huge investment, both in terms of money and time, as we've discussed. This means that we as parents are more invested in every aspect of these activities. With fame and money at the professional and even college level, some parents do hope that the sports will take their kids all the way." So that's just adding to the pressure. Let's take another call from Martin, who's in Medford. You're on the air, Martin.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if you have suggestions for parents who are faced with coaches who are sidelining specific kids for, quote, winning over development and getting all kids involved in the game.
Martin, thanks for your call. Eric Eisendrath?
Well, the first thing we say, and it's tricky, but at least the what we talk about at the beginning is parents, though, stepping back, recognizing at the time that respecting the role of the coach is critically important. Because the reality is, again, the role of the parent in youth sports is to provide unconditional love and support for your child independent of performance. And the reality is that involving yourself, particularly to your child, and saying how your to your child that your coach doesn't know what they're doing, totally puts your kid in the middle. At the same time, what we do say is, if your child is having an experience that's not going well, teaching your child to be an advocate for him or herself and speaking directly to the coach, recognizing that some of these kids are younger than to help to facilitate it. But again, the life skill piece, and also parents focusing on the big picture or the small picture. The big picture role of youth sports is giving the kids an opportunity to play and to have an enjoyable experience. The small picture from the parent sometimes is fixating on how come Jimmy is playing shortstop and we really know, or why is Jimmy in left field when everybody knows Jimmy should be playing shortstop, or how come my daughter is playing, you know, fullback when she should be a midfielder. These are small picture concerns that often derail the parents. So having the child facilitate a conversation with the coach teaches the child to become a self-advocate. The child has some control over the situation. And realistically, the coach then will be far more receptive to hearing a conversation. And frankly, if the parent goes right to the coach and complains, sadly, oftentimes, the parent will then be labeled as the meddlesome, annoying parent. And in the big loser, and that becomes the kid.
You know, in the last couple of minutes we have, I wanted to reflect back on something that Doc Rivers said earlier in the segment. You know, he talked about how the best coaches don't just train great players, but they're teaching people how to be kids, how to be better human beings. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that a lot of parents would agree that is one of the great benefits of participating in youth sports. And I've read these shocking statistics that it's gotten so bad, the pressure's gotten so high on kids that some 70 or 80% of kids drop out of playing extracurricular mm-hmm. sports after middle school. So if sort of the parenting and coaching tide isn't changed, are we, you know, losing an opportunity by losing kids or driving kids out of playing sports? Are we losing opportunity to teach them to be better people?
No question about it. Yeah, 75% of all kids quit youth sports by the age of 13. And the number one reason they cited is it's not fun anymore, and the stressors of that take away the fun are the behavior of the parents and the win-at-all-cost coach.
Rob Crawford, how effective mm-hmm. is the training? And we've just got a minute here to mm-hmm. go. And have you received any backlash from parents watching you and your new coaching techniques?
No. Most parents, when they see the way you're coaching using Positive Coaching Alliance techniques, love you. They love the fact that their child is excited to go to practice every day, excited to come to the game, because, frankly, win or lose, the child is happy. Eric, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I would just say in closing that, you know, this isn't just soft and fluffy or a nice idea. The research supports what we're trying to do. It's based on research of the way kids learn and all the feedback we're getting from great coaches as well.
And there's a lot of technical training that goes on behind
yes,
it as
there
well.
Is.
Well, Eric Eisendrath, lead trainer at the Positive Coaching Alliance, thank you so much for joining us
My
today.
My pleasure.
And Rob Crawford, school administrator and coach at the Faye School in Southboro, thank you as well.
Thank you, Magno.
And listeners, thank you for all your calls. There's a lot more information about the Positive Coaching Alliance at our website, radioboston.org. Keep the conversation going there. And stay with us because up next, a controversial, medical device brings the FDA's approval process into question. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.